Hey, Dee, I counted the flower buds on my Bartzella peony this morning.
And?
One of them has a dozen buds when those open.
Wow, that'll be so pretty, but let's not count our buds before they bloom.
Never. Oh, we would never. I'll get us started on this episode. Welcome to The Garden Angelist, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
And I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden an acre and a half out of 7.5 acres out in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelists because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening. We want you to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. It's time for garden updates.
Yes, and Dee, it's been kind of chilly in Indiana.
Yep.
Dogwood winter.
Yep.
And so I did get a lot of weeding done, and everything's looking much better because I got a lot of weeding done.
Right.
But other stuff I didn't get done. But I will say that my seedlings in the inside are doing quite well. They should be bigger. And this is that phase where I go through and say, oh, these don't look as good as those at the greenhouse. But by July 1st, everybody's all cut up and it is all good.
So I went through that exact same thing because I started my tomatoes and my peppers late. Remember, because I was sick during March and yep. or February, whatever it was. And so I just couldn't get out there. And I had to get my potting soil figured out so it didn't have manure in it. And so I started them way late. And I just started some eggplant seeds the other day, right?
Right.
And here's the thing. My tomatoes are huge now. They're fine. They grew really fast. As soon as it got warm, they took off. And I actually planted some out. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Don't compare your seedlings indoors to the ones that have been coddled along at the greenhouse.
Comparison is the thief of joy, somebody once said.
One of the best quotes of all time.
How about your garden, though?
Oh, good gracious. I've been really busy. It has warmed up here. This morning it rained, and it's supposed to rain this weekend, which is good. That'll give me some time to, I don't know, catch up in the greenhouse, maybe. So I've been busy. I helped my priest, Father Novak, with his garden at his personal home, and it's a little pocket garden, so it wasn't difficult. I have to go buy him some more shrubs, because once we cleared out the space, and I want to thank Luz and his crew for helping me with that, there was no way I could have done it by myself. It was a mess. Like, it had not been cleaned out in probably 15 years because the lady was older.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked bad. There was a lot of gravel. It was just a lot of rock. But once we cleared all that out, it was a much bigger space than I thought it was. So I've got to go buy him some stuff. And then I worked in the tiered gardens with my friend, Sharon, and we got all the Rudbeckia goldsturm out of the beds. Now, by saying we got all of it out, there'll be new shoots because it's from rhizotomous stems. And so you never can totally get rid of it. So I'll be watching for it. Then we mulched it. And then I also had a lot of fun. I went to Leah's garden at Commonwealth, which is down off of what's down in middle of Oklahoma City, and it's off of Western. And I'd never been there before. And so she focuses on native plants and vegetables.
Cool.
Okay. And so she has pollinator plants, natives, veggies, especially cool ones you never see. She had these cool little strawberries, which I did not buy, but I may go back and buy this weekend because I told her I was going to bring her some of my rusty blackhaw seedlings because she can't find it anywhere because it's real hard to find, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to dig her some seedlings. And then I mulched all the cutting gardens. That's not true. I wrote this ahead of time. I have not mulched the cutting gardens. I must have intended to. That'll have to be in my other stuff. I enjoyed the roses, and I did a few Instagram videos, and I wrote a blog post about my spring garden. And then on the rainy days, I planted more seeds. And I put together another garden bed by Vigo. I've got one more to put together. And then I planted out some tomatoes and some peppers and some marigolds. By the way, all my marigolds are up and happy, and I have way too many. So I gave some to Megan and Maddie.
So I'm going to pause with our listeners to catch my breath from all the work that you did.
That might be why I lost some weight this week. I was really busy.
I did want to back up to the Rudbeckia goldsturm.
I hate that plant. Yes.
So I was at the greenhouse with my sister, and she said, I need you to come over and show me which of these seedlings are Rudbeckia goldsturm, because that stuff is everywhere and I've got to get rid of it. I just laughed and laughed.
Yeah, it's bad. So is that aster I have. So that's primarily what we dug out of that bed. And then I put in some Dara, and also put in some Ami, which are, you know, in the carrot family. So I put those in there for fun. We'll see what happens. They're umbels. And the funny part, what got me to go to Leah's was that Monty Don talked about those on in the Poet's Garden, Gardener's World. And I thought, I have tried to start those over and over by, you know, from seed. And I think I just need to winter sow them to make it work. But then Leah had listed that she had it. So I ran down there. She had the green one, the white one, and then she has the purple one. And so they're two different genuses. The green and white one are the same genus. And then the purple one is the Dara. And so we'll see if I can get them to grow, because now I had them plug size.
There you go. Makes all the difference sometimes. So, and I while you were talking, I got a text from my sister. I'll tell you about it in a minute.
Okay. And so let's play. Do you want to play favorites now?
Yes.
You go first. I talked a lot.
So remember last week, right after we recorded, I said, oh, there's the UPS man. He's bringing my Duluth gardening overalls.
Yeah, I want to know why Duluth didn't offer me any, but keep going.
Uh-huh. I don't know why they didn't either. I mean, it took them a while. I responded, and then it's like a couple weeks later, they responded, and then she responded and said, I'm sorry it took so long. But anyway, I don't know why I didn't buy these sooner. They are the most comfortable pants to garden in that I've worn in a long time. And I know at the greenhouse, Courtney wears the Duluth overalls. And when she finds out that they sent me some to review, she's going to be really like, why not me? Well, Florette over on Florette's farm, I know she's wearing some kind of overalls. I don't know if they're Duluth. But I'm telling you, I know why people wear these. They're so comfortable to wear, and they don't bind or grip or, you know, they're just there. Lots of pockets.
Nice.
And yeah, I was out mowing in them. I was out weeding in them. I've already worn and washed them enough to have to wash them twice. And yeah. I should be wearing them for this podcast, because I want to go outside before the rain. So anyway, that's my favorite. We'll put a link to these Duluth Trading gardening overalls. They are the bomb, as they say.
Okay, so I have a little tip for people in Oklahoma that want to wear those. You send them in to Insect Shield, and you get permethrin bonding to those Duluth overalls so that you don't get ticks on you. And I might just buy a couple of pair and send them in for the summertime, because they're nice and loose. And I think that that would be very comfortable. Tuck them into my, you know, boots, and then wrap my tape around them and go on from there. My favorite thing that I've been wearing, not playing favorites, but my favorite thing I've been wearing is I bought these from Insect Shield. I bought these tights. They're not tights. What is that? Leggings. Okay. Uh-huh. And here's the cool thing about them. They, on a cool day, they're kind of warm. But on a hot day, they aren't so warm. I don't know how that happens, but it must be the material. But then down the side, they have a little pocket that your phone fits in.
That's nice.
And it's just right. You don't even know you have your phone on you. And if you need to snap a picture and say, oh yeah, I need to plant, you know, daffodils here. I need to order some daffodils, put them there. You can put a little notice on your phone with a picture. It's a cool thing.
Well, and since we're talking about fashion, I did read somewhere that wool t-shirts, merino wool.
Yeah, I won't be wearing those, but okay.
Well, they said actually in the summertime, they wick away the moisture. And so they don't get all wet and clammy.
Sweaty.
And so they're actually very comfortable to wear. Now, I don't have one to try that out. But anyway, I doubt anybody's really taking fashion advice for us. What is your other favorite?
Okay, so there's just so many beautiful things in my garden that I wrote a blog post, as I said, to immortalize them before the rains came. But I think, and I pronounce this wrong, I pronounce it Vigo, but I think it's Vago. I have to say they're my favorite thing. And I didn't become a franchisee. I didn't want to jump through the hoops. Right. But I'm starting to really, really love them. They look sleek. I'll take pictures of them for the newsletter. I now have four of them. I've got three put together. And they just look clean and nice on the driveway. And I planted out a bunch of tomatoes. And they're just the right height. I have the 17 by 9s, so 9 inches high. You can get taller ones. But they're perfect height for Maddie. So Maddie helped me plant marigolds yesterday. That was fun.
She's three or four?
She's four.
It's four. So that's just to give our listeners a frame of reference. So if you're wanting to garden with kids, that sounds like a great solution.
It's a perfect age. She's very much the little gardener. First thing she does is check out everything that's blooming. We have to go around and look at it. And then we have to have cinnamon dairy-free ice cream.
Which she doesn't even know what that really means.
No, she knows it's cinnamon ice cream. She can't have dairy. She's lactose intolerant. So.
Oh, poor thing.
Oh, well.
Anyway, so we're going to have a new segment, which may only last like this week, but we're going to try it. And that is the question of the week. So we get questions through the week. And so I got the question this week. My sister, who went to the greenhouse 2 weeks ago, was when it was warm and was intent on buying stuff that is not frost tolerant.
Yeah.
Or even cold tolerant. The question she kept texting me last week was, this past week, should I cover my plants? Should I take them inside? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because.
Shouldn't have bought them.
Well, when we get into the high 30s, people think, well, it's all good. It's not frost. But I still remember, and I'll have to look up a source for it, that tomatoes do nothing but below 59.5 degrees Fahrenheit.
And below 45, tropicals are very, very unhappy and will burn. And some of the ones that burn the worst are coleus, tomatoes, eggplant.
And yeah, she didn't buy a lot. And I wouldn't let her buy anything that wasn't like the hanging baskets where you could just take it, put it in the garage, take it back out. But really, listen to me, people. I know when it's time and it's not. Anyway, that was our question of the week.
Okay, so it's not time up in Indianapolis, but we are past the freeze date now. We are past those really low temperatures. They went away a week and a half ago. And interestingly, I had planted out some Rudbeckia, which you would think would do fine, right? It was Rudbeckia cherry brandy.
Yeah.
It did do fine, sort of. So instead of the leaves burning, they turned a dark purple. So they were that not happy. They were just not happy, but you know what? They survived just fine. And I think it got down to 41, which is a little too low for tropicals. And I had Mexican sunflower out there, Tithonia. And the Tithonia really, really pouted, but it's bounced out of it now.
Yeah.
So there you go.
All right. Well, I'll do a quote and take us into our flower topic. Had I but 4 square feet of ground at my disposal, I would plant a peony in the center and proceed to worship. And that is Alice Harding.
We love that quote.
Yes.
And here's the thing. We love peonies.
Yes, we do.
Or peonies. It depends on how you pronounce them.
Or pineys.
Yeah, you could say that too. I've never heard that one here, but it could be.
A lot of people in Indiana have pineys.
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
Colloquialisms. Okay, so here's the thing. We must love these because this is our third episode that we've done on them.
Yeah. And I tell you, what new do we have to say? I do have some new information for you about them.
Please do.
So, well, Alice Harding is Mrs. Edward Harding, and she is one of my lost ladies of garden writing.
Yes.
And we'll link to her sweet story about how when she went to France and found these old gardener couple. I won't spoil it. You'll just have to go read it. But anyway, when I was looking up, there is a peony named Mrs. Alice Harding or Alice Harding. And I've found two different ones. One of them's white. I want to say one of them's pink, but maybe not. But then I read something else that the Ito, as I say, or Ito peonies, I-T-O-H, Ito. Mm-hmm. Ito that were bred in Japan by the Professor Ito, that are a cross between a tree peony and a herbaceous peony.
An intersectional, as it were.
Yes. That one of the parents is Mrs. Alice Harding, or Alice Harding, to the Barzella. That's
fascinating.
Barzella is the really bright yellow one that I have.
I had it too. I killed it. But yes, it's a wonderful peony. I just don't think it was in the right place, because you can grow those here. So I also did some research on peonies, because this cat is bothering me. She went outside and she got wet, and now she's all freaked out about it. So the ones I do best with are herbaceous. And I was writing that blog post, and in the blog post, some of my old peonies are looking spectacular. And I knew that I had bought some from Roy Clem's Song Sparrow Nursery back in the day, like 2013. Uh-huh. And so one of them, I couldn't figure out the name of it. And Song Sparrow died in 2020. I think Roy has passed away and somebody bought it from him. And so I did a little research, and there's a couple that are up in Canada who bought all of his nursery stock of peonies. Isn't that interesting?
That is. That's cool. He probably had some varieties that you can't get anywhere else.
I think he was actually a peony breeder. He was also a pretty famous daylily breeder, which was how I got to know him, because he knew Brother Ray Camp, and they did some daylilies together and did some introductions together. And then somebody else bought his daylily, introductions. He was quite the nurseryman, and a very nice gentleman. I interviewed him for an article one time, and he was just a sweetheart. So I thought that was interesting. And then I went back and looked. I've also bought some from Peonies Envy. That's another place. So, and then I also want to give a shout out, and then we can talk more about different types of peonies. I want to give a shout out to the nice people of Natchez Glen House. They sent me their entire peony collection, and it was right in the middle of when I was sick. And I have several sad things to report, and I'm going to tell them. So one was that my husband, I had taken out the peonies out of the box to make sure they were okay, because you don't want to rot, right?
Right.
And I had made the plans to plant them at my daughter's house. And my husband came through and he burned the box, which had the rest of them in there.
Oh, you didn't have them all out?
No, I'd only pulled out two, because I was going to leave them, open the box, get them aired out, take them to Megan's house because she lives right down the street. Bless his heart, he burned them. This is probably the third thing of mine that it is the third. He's burned bulbs before, and he's burned David Austin roses way back in the beginning, which actually I was pregnant and it made me cry. This time I didn't cry, but I was pretty disturbed. Anyway, I couldn't replace them, but there were two left, and I went and planted those at Megan's house. And I want to say a special thank you to them. They don't just sell peonies, they sell all kinds of things. Daffodils, if I remember right. They have another collection that they're sending out right now. It is all beautifully wrapped in a box. Looks lovely. It would be a great Mother's Day gift. So they were a pink peony collection. Oh, well.
So I'll tell you about my peony collection. And I can tell you exactly where I bought them, because I've only bought peonies once. And that was from the old Frank's Nursery and Crafts. I bought a peony in a box. And it was Shirley Temple, all white.
I love Shirley Temple.
I rescued my dad's peonies, which are a real soft pink. When my sister had some remodeling done at their house, and she said that looks like they're going to take these out if you don't take them. So that was July. And I took them, and they've survived. And I think she's got one, and my older sister has one, and I have several. I have one that a work colleague gave me eons ago. It's a dark, dark pink.
Yep.
And then back, I don't know, 10 years ago, and I should have been a bit more diligent and looked it up, Proven Winner sent me a peony, and it's sitting out there, and it was small when I got it, and it's kind of in a mixed in with a bunch of other perennials, and it's taken a while to get up to size, but it looks pretty good. But when I was out there weeding the other day, guess what else I found out there?
I don't know. What'd you find?
I think I found a peony seedling.
Could be.
Because
it's possible.
I try to deadhead the peonies because I just don't want them to, I want them to be bulked up as plants. I don't want them to think that they've got
produce seed.
Mm-hmm. But that one is intermixed with a bunch of other perennials, and I often forget it. So I think that it set seed, and there's a seedling over there. Now, it's a little bit too close to the spruce, so I'm probably going to have to move it in the fall. But I thought, ooh, that's interesting.
Yep.
And then there's Barzella.
And then there's Barzella, which is an Ito. Yeah, she's amazing.
I bought one from the greenhouse, and they are not cheap.
Mm-mm. And they were when they first came out, they were $100, over $100.
They were.
I bought one.
They were.
Now, I killed here's it.
Two interesting things. So I bought one from her several years ago, and I planted it back in the back, and it's done pretty well. And then I've told this story before when I went to Costco. Always look at the plants at Costco. You never know. But there's Barzella for like $35 each. I bought two, but they've done really well in the front, and they're going to be showstoppers here in another couple of weeks. And I don't see anything in the forecast that says they're going to get slowed down, but they look marvelous. In fact, I would say in central Indiana, in spite of the low temps the last week or so, we are actually having a very marvelous spring compared to last
year.
We
are too.
Last year, we had frost at the exact wrong time, and like all the lilacs were nothing. They're beautiful this year. So we're having a great.
My lilacs were gorgeous.
But anyway, so that's my little peony stuff.
So we should say a little bit about peonies and the types, because we've kind of talked about it. And then we should talk about how to grow them. Why my peony doesn't bloom. You know, the questions we get. All right, ready? There, she's like, I was enjoying my whole Ito moment there.
No, just thinking about how beautiful it's going to be when it blooms, when they bloom.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. And you know what? You can find them relatively inexpensively now.
Well, that's, and in fact, okay, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about planting.
Okay, planting so, first. Can we talk about types first?
Okay, they're herbaceous. That's your grandma's old-fashioned ones.
But there are lots of really fancy herbaceous ones,
yeah,
like the Japanese anemone type. I grow a lot of those.
Yes.
So I probably have 35 peonies.
I don't have 35.
Herbaceous just means, wait. Herbaceous means that they die all the way to the ground. That's important. Okay. Then there's Ito.
Well, then we should talk about tree peony at the other end. These do not die back to the ground. They are notoriously difficult plants. They always get frosted at exactly the wrong time. And so you must really love tree peonies because they take a bit of coddling, I think, in my opinion,
So I bought one. I had one and I bought it from Song Sparrow years ago. I think actually Roy sent it to me for free. I coddled that thing for 5 years. And in that 5 years, I saw two blooms.
Out of here.
Well, it died. And it was not happy here.
So then the cross between the two is the Ito, however you say it, Ito.
Ito.
Which are the they call them Ito peonies. And those
are the
ones.
They also call them intersectional because really they're, I think they would be interspecific, but that's what they call them is intersectional. So it's a mix between a tree peony and a herbaceous. It also dies to the ground because it doesn't have stems like a tree peony. It's easier to grow than a tree peony, and it's worth trying. I don't think it likes Oklahoma's heat as well as herbaceous peonies do. You can stick herbaceous peonies out in the middle of a field because flower farmers do, and they will take off and do really well if you have water.
I will have to say that the nice thing about the herbaceous peonies is as far as perennials go, they'll outlast you. They never
100 years.
Yeah. And so they are the state flower of Indiana because somebody probably said because every farmhouse everywhere has peonies around it or somewhere. And you'll see like a strip down a yard or whatever that's got peonies and sitting out in the middle of the yard, so to speak.
And the house might be gone. But the peonies are still there. They're kind of like some daffodils. They'll just last forever.
Exactly.
Which is one of their great qualities. So let's talk about how to grow them and how to plant them. You talk about how to plant them first.
So planting peonies is basically, I just plant them in the ground. And you want to make sure that that root part is about an inch or so down in the soil because you don't want it to be too high and they won't bloom too deep and they won't bloom. People get kind of fussy about that. But I mean,
It's just not that hard.
It's not that hard. And I've transplanted them from here, and you transplant in the fall. Once the foliage dies, you dig up a section of that root. And I've taken it to my nephew and his wife to their garden, and it just fine. And I planted it in the fall. So they're relatively easy to plant. I don't know that we should make a big deal about that.
Well, the only thing I have to say is that, yes, you should plant those eyes right below the surface of the soil. And the reason you should is because Oklahoma sometimes has very warm winters and they need a chilling period. I don't think that's as big a problem in Indiana as it is here. But the question I get asked over and over again is, why does my peony not bloom? The one reason your peony didn't bloom is because it's too young. It hasn't bulked up enough. Number two, you planted it too deep, probably. Because here you wouldn't plant it too shallow. So I suspect that those are the two big things about, especially herbaceous. I suspect Edos are the same. And we should mention that Edos have an unusual color palette because Bartzella is yellow.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons people love them. And the flowers are much, much bigger. So those are some peony tips. Yeah, you can give them a little bit of, I love cotton seed holes that are composted. I like putting that on top of my peonies because it just gives them a little nutrition, not too much. They don't need much. My ones out front were the first ones I planted out by the street, and the clumps are huge now. I'm showing with my arms. They're a good 2 feet across, 3 feet across. Those haven't bloomed yet. They're getting ready to bloom. So, and you know what? A $5 peony looks really good. Like Alexander Fleming is a great old peony. Sarah Bernhardt is probably your dad's pink peony.
Right.
Those are doubles.
Shirley in the herbaceous Temple.
Class, Shirley Temple ZZ Festiva Maximus or Maxima is really good. It's white. You don't have to go all fancy if you don't want to, and maybe start out with some $5 ones. And then I was trying to think if there's another one, Carl Rosenfeld. That's another great old pink, bright pink one that it just does great. Easy.
Yeah. So here's the other thing I would say about peonies. Everybody's like, oh, you got to plant those in the fall. They'll be selling them at the greenhouses in the spring because they want you to see the flowers. Don't be afraid to buy those. Don't be afraid to plant those. Like I said, I've dug them up in July when they were going to be destroyed and potted them up. They were fine. And here's the interesting thing up at the greenhouse. She has Bartzella where you can buy the root right now because she said with the shipping costs and everything, the growers don't want to ship or you don't want to pay for shipping for a fully grown plant because that pot and that dirt is heavy. And so she ordered all the roots. And so she's selling those right now. And then she says what she doesn't sell by, I don't know what time period, she'll pot those up and grow those on and sell them as grown plants. But even the roots.
I think a lot of places do that
with
a lot of plants. And you know what, Carol? I think we're going to see more and more of that because shipping costs are so high. And also there's a couple other factors. The environment, it's more frugal and you don't have to use as much stuff, you know, to pack them and everything else. Number two. And number three, there's been a lot of talk about shaking off dirt and rinsing off dirt because of all the crazy pests that are in the soil.
Right.
And so there's some of the, even though a lot of things are grown in peat moss or coir, still stuff can get up in there. So there's been a lot of talk about that in the last couple of years. I think we're going to see more and more of that. They already do that with daylilies. Daylilies are sold bare root.
Oh, they have been.
In fact, that's
the
preference, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
And roses are sold bare root most of the time. Antique Rose Emporium still sells them in plants, but David Austin sure doesn't.
No. So to wrap this up, I will link to, you found my blog post about how to harvest a peony in the bud in the spring, wrap it, put it in the refrigerator, and then you can bring it out midsummer and it'll fully open within 24 hours. And I showed how I did that on that one blog post. It's really simple.
It's a great blog post. It's what florists do all the time.
Yep. And then we'll link to the previous episodes we had about peonies if anybody wants to hear us rattle on more about peonies. It might be the Department of Redundancy department, but be that as it may.
We didn't talk about peony diseases this time, and it is in one of the previous episodes because we talked a lot about it. All right, you ready for the next quote?
I am.
A rose by any other name would smell as sweet. That's a famous line, so famous, from William Shakespeare's play Romeo and Juliet. And why are we using a rose quote in front of vegetables?
Because you decided that our vegetable topic was the Rosaceae family. Malus genus is the genus. Apple. Yeah.
So we discussed that, and we were discussing the fact that roses and apples and a lot of other things are all in this same family, which is the rose family. And part of that, and people are like, wait a minute, apples and roses don't have much in common. Oh, but they do.
They do.
Because roses in their original forms made rose hips. And a few of mine still, I still have a few that do. And rose hips look like little tiny apples. And they also have tons of vitamin C and are super good for you and the birds and everything else. Also, things in the Malus family and in and Rosa both, which for some reason,
so it's
Siri has decided to pop up. So I can't hear you, Carol.
It's the Malus genus in the Rosaceae family.
You'll have to, I didn't hear any of that because he popped up, but I'll just take your word, you know,
I said,
for it. So
the Malus genus is in the Rosaceae family.
As is the Rosa genus. It's in the Rosaceae family. And there's a bunch of other stuff that's in that family too. And they have very similar disease issues.
They do. They do. The other one that's in there that would be in your vegetable garden, because I don't know that people are growing roses and apples in their vegetable garden, is our friend the strawberry. The strawberry's in that family.
And so are plums.
Yes, plums.
And plums are in the Prunus family. I mean, Prunus genus.
Right.
And one thing I wanted to mention is that out here where I live, the Mexican plum is having a real resurgence on the native plant boards because of what? The Bradford pear.
Yes.
The Bradford pear is just trying to eliminate both the Prunus Mexicana and the sand plum, which is Prunus angustifolia Marshall. I don't know why it's named Marshall. I didn't look that far up. But sand plums, which are also known as Chickasaw plums, and Mexican plums are very closely related, and they are also in the Rosaceae family.
Well, and I would also say also in the Rosaceae family is service berries.
Yep.
And I already mentioned strawberries, which is the one thing from the rose family that grows in my garden. But
we should, you know what, next week, that should be our next question from listeners. I've got our question. It's about strawberries.
Well, no.
Every time I go to a concert.
Our listeners have to ask us.
Well, they do ask me.
Okay.
We make up the rules. It can be whatever we want.
That's true.
So you said you would never grow a rose in a vegetable garden. Well, they look really good at the end of rows.
They do.
And actually, they're used a lot in French gardening and especially in vineyards. And part of that is because they can spot the disease that affects grapes. It's a wilt. It's probably, the same thing that gets on, you know, the one that I can't think of it right now. Any other powdery mildew. So they have trouble with powdery mildew on grapes and a couple other bad diseases. Well, guess what? Those are also on roses. And usually the roses show it first. So it became a tradition to plant them at the end of the rows of the grapes in French gardens. And I'm kind of looking into that this year because since I put my Vega beds down the center of the driveway, I have these roses in pots and I could put them at each end. That'd be pretty.
That would be very pretty. Because the other thing is, depending on when the rose blooms and what type of rose it is, it could also attract pollinators to your garden.
Yes, it could if it has an open bloom.
Yes.
That's true.
So what else do you want to say about the Rosaceae family?
That's pretty much it. I just thought it would be something fun and something different.
Yeah, and we'll link to what spurred this on is you found an article from the Smithsonian Gardens that said an apple is a rose. And I will say this, having studied plant taxonomy in college, and then they changed all the plant families around, people are very surprised to find out what plants are related to each other. That they had never suspected.
Yeah, now they're doing it by DNA instead of plant characteristic. And so to me, I know this isn't popular with taxonomists because they want to be precise and they're scientists and I get it. But part of the reason we grouped plants into families was so that we could kind of understand how plants relate. And when you do it by DNA, you get some weird stuff. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. You find out. Yeah. But that's okay. That's okay. I'll do a quote.
Okay. It's not my area of expertise and I don't care that
it's not my area either. So here's the quote. I cannot remember the books I've read any more than the meals I've eaten. Even so, they have made me. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
A cool quote. And our bookshelf, which also relates to the Rosaceae family and a lot of other things, is the Herbalist's Guide, How to Build and Use Your Own Apothecary. And this is by Mary Colvin, R-H-A-H-G. And it comes out on May 7th. And yeah. It is a complicated little book.
Well, and she's trying, she wants to simplify the, she's a registered herbalist. That's what RH stands for. Yes. And then AHG is the American Herbalist Guild. And she also owns a company called Ancestral Herbology. And on the back, it says she wants to inspire a new generation of herbalists and provide education and mentorship in the study of herbalism with the safe practice of using herbs as medicine. She has devoted her time and efforts toward the future of herbalism as the former treasurer and vice chairman of the AHG, the host of Herbology Talk, sounds like a podcast, as a speaker, as the host of the training in her herbalism series on TikTok and through her website, herbalistmentor.com. Yes, Dee.
Go Mary.
You know, she is trying to simplify the training, but there's parts of this.
But it's
complicated.
Yeah, it's very, yeah, because I turned to page 123, which is elderberry, which is Sambucus species. And I love the Sambucus. I have both the one that is just native-ish. I don't really know. Anyway, I have the regular one. And it's very, very popular in England, believe it or not.
Right.
Very popular because they love elderberry cordial. So I have two of them and they've done extremely well in my garden with very little help. And they're actually planted in native soil with nothing. And they don't even get water. And yet they bloom every year. But I had to go to Texas to get them. But here we are in this Sambucus. And it says, elderberry is a popular and trending herbal preparation that you can find almost anywhere. However, it was the flowers that were traditionally used at the onset of a cold or flu when a fever persisted and the body wouldn't cool down. I didn't know that. I knew all about elderberry syrup and how the berries are poisonous unless you boil them first and all this other stuff. But I didn't know that. Did you know that?
I did not know that. I will tell you that I know so little about herbs. What I like about this book is she's got an exercise to do at the end of each one, which sometimes it's a recipe and sometimes it's something else. And then throughout she's got Mary's advice.
It's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, this is just chock full of information. And I always feel like every gardener should have a book on herbs and all their uses on their bookshelf. And this one would be a good modern one to have.
Yeah. Now, she's got one. Do you pronounce it? Okay, on page 141. Do you pronounce it Mullein or do you pronounce it Mullen? I hear it pronounced a bunch of different ways. It's Verbascum thapsus.
I would pronounce it Mullen. Mullen.
Okay. So I'm actually growing that in my garden this year. In my vegetable garden, I put it down the center of one of the beds for height and because it attracts lots of pollinators and because I tend to put flowers in my vegetable gardens. But anyway, I just thought that she's got nettle in here, which, by the way, Leah sells stinging nettles. And I think it's interesting about how each section has the taste, the qualities, the parts used, its medicinal properties. It's really a good book, and I will be keeping it on my bookshelf as a reference because there's just so much.
There is. And so, I'm still reading and trying to comprehend her section on energetic, the use of descriptions of plants and people to determine the correct herbs for an individual. And I'm going to have to read that several times, I think, to grasp it all. But I do want to grasp it all.
Right.
Because it just sounds so interesting. And I was going to say, related to elderberry, by the way, I mean, my sister had texted me last summer and said, where could you buy elderberry plants? Because her grandkids were always coming down with colds and, you know, that's because they're little kids in school. And they've given them her doctor had recommended elderberry syrup or some elderberry thing. And so she was.
Yeah, elderberry's great. It helps your immune
system. Well, she said, you know, they were thinking, could they grow it and make their own elderberry syrup? And I'm like, well, you can kill yourself too if you're not careful. So.
Yeah, if they accidentally pulled the berries off and ate them, that would not
be good. No, and I said, and elderberries are really briars. They're not well behaved.
They're not. But if you plant them in native Oklahoma soil and don't water them, they don't bramble much.
So I agree with you. This is a comprehensive book. I mean, she has got all kinds of good information in here. Even weeds that we think of, like chickweed, is in here, and cleavers, which is another weed. And I've pulled cleavers out. Those things stick to your gloves and everything. But
yes, they have those stupid little hairs.
Yeah,
on them
that she said that as a
I've got them all over my.
She
garden.
Says as a child, I would throw them on my brother's back just to have him notice them later in the day. It was fun to watch them stick to clothing due to the small hooks covering the plant.
Yeah,
until you have to unhook them all.
Okay, so I like her sustainability chapter where she talks about gathering plants in the wild. Uh-huh. And knowing what you need to know, which native plants in your area are at risk.
Yes.
Because, and then she says, plant those herbs.
Yes.
Because that is a huge problem. And it's really a problem because we've, you know, devastated whole areas. Yeah. That's why milkweed
Don't want to over harvest anything growing in the wild. And then she also has that very good advice that all foragers have, which is make dang sure you know what you're picking. Or pollen or whatever.
Yeah, don't do anything in the carrot family. Because the carrot family is just full of poisonous stuff. And I'm actually on an Oklahoma, I think they're an Oklahoma forager group. I don't remember their actual name. But it's funny because that carrot issue comes up at least weekly.
Oh, I'm sure.
Somebody comes in and says, is this this or is this that? And everybody's like, I ain't touching that. And these people are experts. Yeah. So
anyway, that's The Herbalist Guide, How to Build and Use Your Own Apothecary by Mary Colvin. And we are both keeping it because we believe that it is an excellent reference. All kinds of basics, guides to 35 commonly used herbs, information that you would need to grow those to harvest them. It's really pretty good. So anyway, that's our book this week.
It's extremely good. Yeah, it really is. Okay, and then grow your own herbs. She says that in there. And then I think herbs are some of the most fascinating plants to grow.
Yes.
I grow new ones all the time because there's becoming a lot more available. It used to be you could only buy like 3 things.
Well, I'm growing that clary sage we talked about last summer, but it's not in her book. At least not as clary sage. So we shall see. I don't know. I'm not going to use it or anything. But yeah, we need a quote now.
It was such a spring day as breathes into a man an ineffable yearning, a painful sweetness, a longing that makes him stand motionless, looking at the leaves or grass and fling out his arms to embrace he knows not what. And that's by John Galsworthy. I have no idea where that's from, but I love it. We've been having days like that, Carol. You have too.
Not as much.
Although
it's been chilly.
Chilly.
I mean, the other day.
But it will be. You'll have them.
I was out there in a sweatshirt jacket in the middle of the afternoon thinking, this is kind of cold.
It was cold like that even here a week ago. And then it just turned off. And now it's like the perfect weather, although it rained today. So for our dirt, we had some interesting dirt. You found the first piece. Well, you found them both, really, although I knew about the second. So the first one is 30 Ways to Make Your Garden Look Older, and it was in Garden and Gun magazine. And the author, I want to say who the author is, C.J. Lotz Diego, and it was actually came out in November of 2023, but it's timeless, this one is. And I thought it was just a really, really good article for a couple of reasons. He gives you some good ideas how to make it older.
Yeah. Make it look older.
His partner, make it look older. Because he moved into a new construction house in Charleston, South Carolina. Well, there's nowhere that is older looking in the United States than Savannah and Charleston.
Correct.
Those two places are old looking. And if you moved into a brand new house, you would want to get you know, you'd want a romantic garden. As he said, I wanted a romantic garden full of ferny, mossy textures. Well, he'll get that. Tons of patina and gracious character. So he started looking for old bricks first. And I have a ton of old bricks in my garden because I love old bricks. And then he started doing some other stuff, and he started doing thrifted terracotta pots, which are always, terracotta is very timeless. But then in this deal, he also met his now husband, Max, who's a florist. And so the florist, you know, florists are so creative. And so he helped him learn about native plants, texture, and patience, because the author is not patient. And so I just thought he had great ideas, like let the roses meander and climb. Well, first of all, you got to buy the climbing type roses or bourbon roses that like to pretend to climb to do that. Right. But, you know, that makes all the difference in the world, right?
It does.
And then he went around and he interviewed a lot of garden writers, famous gardeners, not so famous gardeners, just famous writers like him. He interviewed Frances Mays, who wrote Under the Tuscan right. Sun. She's also written a book called A Place in the World, which I have read that.
I want to read it. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Is it good? So I thought it was just great. And there's just so much good information in here about having plants with stories. And I did an Instagram this week, a reel about my rose with no name, my pretty peachy apricot rose.
Right.
That was very popular because people love a good story.
That's true. And I will say on this article, it is also a rabbit hole of books that you would want to get and read. And I did get from the library one of the books that he listed on here, Creating a Garden Retreat by Virginia Johnson. I did not have the chance to read it before I had to sadly return it to the library, but I may check that one out again because it's just...
He also talks about Guy Wolf in here, who, you know,
we do love a good Guy Wolf pot.
Guy. Yeah, I broke one. Did I tell you about that? Yes. It's a great tragedy in my garden. I broke one. Oh, well. There's also, he mentions...
Wait. Don't say, oh, well. Oh, well. Don't say, oh, well. You know, the Japanese, and we'll have to look up what it is. They believe that a broken and then repaired something or other...
It's better, but this one's not okay,
because they, you know, when they have the little gold line that goes down through, and I watched a video of a guy taking a broken bowl and fixing it, and it's beautiful, and it was in several pieces, and how they entered the gold. So anyway, I'm sorry yours is not repairable, but I was going to say,
yeah, it's not. The rim broke, and it's just because I got sick and I didn't bring in that pot, and I knew better, but it happens. So he also mentions a new pottery I don't know, Huel Pottery, but they don't ship. Neither does Guy. Ben does. I have a lot of Ben Wolf pots. I also have a lot of Peter Wakefield pots. I love Peter's pots. They're wonderful too. And Peter is a very nice man, as is Ben, as is Guy. They're all nice, nice guys. Anyway, sorry, I got off topic. Keep going. Anything else you want to say?
Our friend Felder Rushen has a book out called Maverick Gardeners. And the quote is, all good gardens, no matter the style or size, have some sort of accessory or art that truly personalizes it. And I think making a garden look older is finding art or maybe an older piece of art. But you want to be careful when you're making your garden look older. Kind of go slow older. Find some older pieces to put in it. They recommend planting lots of perennials. Don't tart it up like a teenager trying to be a 30-year-old, okay?
Or an old woman trying to be a 30-year-old.
Well, no, that's the opposite direction.
That would be the opposite.
I thought that was a pretty good piece of advice.
That's true. That's a really good one.
I made it up myself.
You know what? Having, oh, you did? Okay, well, we'll use it as a quote sometime. I think using native plants in your garden that behave well. Bluebird aster's a good one. It's a named variety, but it's a selection. It's a native. I think using roses in a garden can add age, especially romantic looking ones. There's a lot of things you can do, having good surfaces. But you know what? Ultimately, people come to my garden and they say, oh my gosh, how do I do that? Well, first of all, it took me 35 years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing. You do have to have patience. So anyway, that is 30 ways to make your garden look older from Gardening and Gun Magazine. It's a great article. We'll link to it. And then very quickly, we'll say, if anybody is intrigued by that botany game we got, that same company is going to do a Kickstarter for another flower game. And this is Le Fleur. And it's based on French flowers and looks very good. And I'm sure the kickoff is April 30th. I'm going to get an email alert. You know, we're going to, and I think you can get the game for, I think they said $39.99 and it'll retail for $60. But anyway, our friends are going.
You know, we're going to do it.
Yeah, we're going to do it. That's that one. So let me do a quote.
We love them.
Let me do a quote. In my opinion, too much attention to weather makes for the instability of character. And that is Elizabeth Googe in The Little White Horse. That was my obsession last week. Tell me about your rabbit hole.
So mine involves alpha-gal syndrome. I did some more research and I'm part of the Alpha-Gal Action Committee. And there is an upcoming congressional committee hearing that's for the national congressional hearing on May 2nd. This episode will drop on May 1st. We will have a link to the form to encourage your congressperson to attend, because here's the deal. There's over 450,000 people who have alpha-gal syndrome in the United States. And that is a very conservative number because we really don't have testing information. And this hearing is to get it out there that we do get legitimate testing information. And on top of that, it's also to work on letting them know about medication, because for members in the community, medication is a huge issue. And also foods. A lot of foods don't list when they have mammal ingredients. So you might think that you're getting a turkey hot dog, but you might be getting a turkey hot dog with a dose of gelatin casing and get very sick. So it is a bipartisan meeting. Yay, Congress. You're doing something bipartisan.
Yeah.
And yeah, yay. You're trying to do some work. I appreciate that. So it's a very easy form to fill out. And that was my rabbit hole. What's yours?
So I basically read books this week, so I don't have a brand new rabbit hole. But I do want to recommend the Twyford Code by Janice Hallett, which won all kinds of awards in 22. The Solving the Mystery of the Century, the Crime of the Century or something. I don't know. But it's written as though it is transcribed recordings of an old guy who's kind of recording into his son's old iPhone that his son gave him after he got out of prison. Yeah. But he doesn't really have a relationship with his son. So he's telling all this stuff as he goes, you know, and they're trying to solve this code. And it's all fun and twisty. And I, you know, was like, I didn't see that coming. So that was,
I love fun, twisty books.
That is a fun, twisty book, and I highly recommend it. And so the funny thing is, it takes a while because it's a transcribed. And so he talks a lot about this teacher he had in remedial English class, RE.
Uh-huh.
And her name is Miss Isles, I think. And the transcription, it just lists it as missiles.
Oh, how funny.
And so there's some quirky things like that, which just kind of add to the charm of this book. But I started reading it and I'm like, oh, not going to stop now. Anyway, garden commissions.
Fun. Okay, so I received some trial plants from a company called Westoff, and they came from Peace Valley Farm. And I got on their list this year, probably because of Peace Valley Farm, because I'm on another list through them. And so I need to go out and plant those, which I'm going to have to find some pots to put them in and put them around some roses or something, because a lot of them are tropicals. And then I need to weed where I pulled out some little lime hydrangeas that just died. And I'm telling this story because good, bad, and the ugly.
They didn't try
Stuff
hard enough.
Just dies sometimes,
you
guys.
They didn't try hard enough.
And they didn't. I don't know if they got... Well, it couldn't have gotten too wet because it was hydrangeas. Anyway, my plan is in that same spot, which is east facing. Guess what's going to go there?
Peonies?
Come on. No, zinnias.
Oh, zinnias. Okay.
I already have peonies in there, actually.
Well,
and the peonies are really happy that those died, by the way. That's nice.
I was trying to tie it all together.
Well, thank you. But you knew it was going to be zinnias. It's like you and Violas. The other thing is I just got to do some more weeding. It's just that time of year. Weed and mulch, weed and mulch, weed and mulch.
So it's the Department of Redundancy Department. I need to weed and weed and weed some more and cut back, tend to my seedlings. I still have those seedlings in those winter sown containers. And I'm like, oh, I lost these. It wasn't anything I cared about much. Some of those, anyway.
It's time to Chelsea chop, isn't it?
Not yet. No, we're a month from Chelsea chop here.
Oh, I'm out here looking at my bluebird aster. I better chop it and chop it.
Yeah, we're a month from that. So anyway, I think we're frost free. I don't think we're going to go into the 30s, but I am not the one to declare it. As that one quote that says, too much attention to the weather makes for instability of character. So anyway, with that, I'm going to wrap this thing up. We are going on and on. Thank you for listening to The Garden Angelus. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
And if you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review. It helps us get noticed by others and the algorithm. Could you also share our podcast with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And subscribe to our free Substack newsletter, The Garden Angelus at Substack.com, which is also linked to in our show notes. Carol and I have a lot of fun with it every week. We trade off. And if you do, you get a link to listen to the podcast a whole day early.
And if you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we earn a small commission and it costs you nothing.
Or you can set up a monthly subscription through Buzzsprout, or you can make a one-time donation through PayPal.
Thank you to everyone who has done so. It helps us pay for podcast hosting.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the Garden Gate. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.